Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Sean Eisenhower from Iridicio. Welcome back, Sean.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me again. I'm looking forward to a discussion.
So am I. And being an expert in maintenance, reliability, training, asset management, you got every base covered when we start talking about how do we implement these programs? How do we make them successful? You've had a wide range of experiences, starting off as an engineer, consulting, and then actually being a partner with Iridicio. Can you fill in any blanks that I may have missed there?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of experience, and I've been really lucky. Over the years, I've been able to see what success looks like, but I've also been able to see sites that didn't make it happen, that it just, you know, it didn't work for whatever reason. And especially in today's conversation around change management, I'm going to talk about some of those examples as we go forward. So we'll try to pull some real-world examples into the discussion.
And Iridicio, you guys are not a consulting company per se. You guys are more focused on building capabilities within organizations, correct?
That's exactly right. I mean, one of the things that we saw, and this really comes from a history of seeing a lot of these sites over the years, is that sometimes consulting is not always the best answer for every site. There are many sites where they need to really develop their people and let their people own the change. And that's a lot of what we focus on. All or most of our curriculums, depending on the needs of the client, are built around the idea of the students implementing a project in their facility so that they see a return on investment and they've got deliverables that they can share with a coach that coaches them through each step along the way. So that coach is remote, which is quite different than a lot of folks are used to, but it has been quite successful over the last 3 or 4 years.
We've had numerous conversations already around the importance of training, the coaching, the application of it. So if anyone's interested in hearing that conversation, I'll make sure to provide a link to it in the show notes so they can listen to that exact episode.
Sounds very good.
So Sean, you've been involved in maintenance and reliability for a long time. How long have you been involved in the actual change management portion of it?
The change management piece, I kind of wonder about that because whereas I've been involved in maintenance and reliability for about 19 years, I think the change management goes back much further than that. And what I mean by that is I can look back to early things that I did that maybe I didn't necessarily do as well as I could because of change management issues. So more specifically, I've focused on change management for about the last 12 or 13 years, and that'll be a lot of the stories that I'll bring forward today.
For those that aren't familiar with change management, what is change management?
You know, change management is really just the people side of your implementation. We can come up with, you know, great capital projects to implement. We can come up with great procedural changes and new business processes. All of those things technically can be, you know, nearly perfect. But at the end of the day, if we can't get the organization and the individuals that make up that organization to accept it, then we can't get the success that we're looking for. So when we talk about change management, it's that softer side of the implementation.
That's why it's so vitally important. It's bringing people along that journey, getting them engaged in these changes and not just focused on a specific process, but it's more focused on the people portion.
It really is.
And being focused on that people portion, like you said, it's a little bit softer. It's not so black and white. It's not very so much process driven as one would expect. So with that, can organizations drive a maintenance reliability program without change management?
You know, there's some interesting studies, and I'll quote a few of the numbers as we go through the rest of the day today, but there's some really interesting studies that have looked at that. And one in particular that comes to mind for me is a study that was done by ProSci a few years back. I believe it was 2014. And in that study, they looked at implementations and not, you know, just maintenance implementations, but anything that folks were doing within their organization that was what we would call big deal change. And as they looked at it, if that organization had poor change management practices, then they would expect about 16% of those projects to yield the results that they expected. Now, what's interesting is as you increase the maturity of the change management within those implementations, it goes from 16 up to 46 for fair, 77% for good, and 96 for excellent. And so what that tells me is the change management piece is really driving the ability to get the return on investment, no matter what the project is. But the other thing that I think it tells me, and I think something we'll talk about a little later, is that you don't have to be perfect. If you're just doing things better than what you've done them in the past, you're going to see substantial improvement three times just by going from poor to fair.
Those numbers you referred to, just doing a little bit makes a huge difference in the back end.
Absolutely.
Understanding the importance of this change management and the impact that it can have on success of any implementation or project for that matter, why can't leaders just tell people that, hey, this is a change that's coming and expect it to all work out?
That's a great question, because a lot of leaders do that. You'll see them come forward to a group, announce a big organizational change, and then go on about their business and just expect it to happen. We'll talk about some models a little later, but one that we'll talk about is the ADKAR model for change. And in it, the first step is awareness. But what's interesting is that's just the first step. We've got four more steps after that. So, you know, that's one issue with just going forward to your organization and telling them they're going to change. Now, the second issue that I see is that if that change really is a big deal, if it's really going to make a substantial impact in my life as an employee, my inner voice starts to talk almost immediately. Is worried about things like, okay, does this mean I'm going to lose my job? Does this mean I'm going to have to find a new job? Does this mean I'm going to have to relocate to a new part of the plant or a new business? All those things are going on in my head. That inner voice is now louder than the person who's giving the message on the stadium, the podium, or the video. And at this point, I'm not hearing them. So if someone thinks they're just going to walk up in front of a group and tell them about a big deal change one time and expect it to happen, what they don't realize is the audience really only heard the first part of what they said. So repetition is another piece that becomes really important as we go forward in order to drive that success.
If you just provide that awareness piece, everybody worries. They jump to the worst case scenario for them. Even though it might be a good change for the organization, they're more concerned about their internal issues. So with that, why does a maintenance and reliability professional need to be concerned and consider change management in everything they do?
Well, you know, especially for maintenance and reliability folks, a lot of the things that we do are kind of what I would call big deal change. If you're going to, for instance, start kitting work, that's a fundamental change that is going to affect a lot of your craftsmen. If you're going to require everyone to put in a work request that will be converted to a work order, that's another fairly big change that impacts a lot of folks. I'll say from my experience, especially, the maintenance and reliability community tends to be highly resistive. And because they're highly resistive to change, that makes it all the more important for us to understand the tools of change management.
Especially considering the older age of some of the tradesmen and supervisors in that, as we are going through this skills gap at the moment, they've been doing it a certain way for 30 years. Why are they going to change for that last year that they're doing? So what steps can a professional take to manage that change?
Well, when I talk about it, I kind of talk about it in a series of models. And we'll talk a little more about the models specifically, maybe a little later. But I think the first thing you really got to figure out is, who are going to be your first followers? And you may have seen the video about first followers on YouTube. It shows a crazy dancing man, and then all of a sudden a few people join him. Those are his first followers. And then the next thing you know, the whole entire hillside at this musical show ends up down there with him dancing. It's a great model for what we have to do from a reliability standpoint moving forward. It's really not about the leader. If you're a leader without followers, you're just a crazy guy, like we see in the beginning of that video. It's that first couple of followers that you get that make you a true leader and allow you to implement that change. So one of the first things I tell folks is you need to go after those informal leaders. Who are they? Who does everybody look to see what he or she thinks when a new change comes out or something gets implemented? And so if we can get those folks on board, one of the tools that we'll talk about later is called ADKAR. It's a great tool for getting those first followers or informal leaders on board. The next one, that we'll talk about more in detail is Cotter's model for change. And I use that a lot of times from an organizational change standpoint. Once I get those first followers on board, those informal leaders, how do I now start to shape what the organization sees so that the organization can get on board long term? And then, you know, two big things for me, planning is absolutely critical, and it's planning to communicate. It's planning for how you're going to coach and change. It's planning for how you're going to execute and meet the needs of the individuals. Planning and project planning as a whole is also just as important as the change management piece that we're talking about today.
They go hand in hand. You can't manage change if you don't have a project timeline. It won't be as effective anyways. Now, you mentioned a specific model in the steps, and you mentioned ADKAR. Is that the one you prefer to use as a framework for change management, or is there others that you prefer?
Well, so Jeffrey Hyatt, the gentleman who invented ADKAR, I think he would definitely tell you that you can manage change using his model and his model alone. I am a big fan of the ADKAR model, but I do believe that really there are probably three models at least that everyone should be familiar with. The first one, of course, is Jeffrey Hyatt's ADKAR model. ADKAR stands for awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. And it's kind of a linear process for how we change, in my mind, those first followers in the organization. If we can create awareness of what we're doing and why we're doing it, then that'll lead to that desire. And we'll build that desire by telling them what's in it for them and how it's going to make their job easier. Once they've got that desire, now we can impart some knowledge to them and they'll accept it. But without the desire, we can teach all we want, but there won't be anybody listening. From the knowledge step, we're going to transition into ability. Ability becomes critical because you can teach someone a lot of great things, but if they can't use it in the real world, it doesn't have a return on investment. And then the last step, of course, is reinforcement. And that's that idea of, okay, this is something new. This is something different. What am I doing to make sure that people understand that this new, different, maybe more complicated way of doing things is the right way and the way we're going to do it for an extended period of time? So the ADKAR model, love it for getting individuals on board. But as I mentioned earlier, my second favorite is Leading Change by John Cotter. That book refers to the Cotter Organizational Change Model. The Cotter's Organizational Change Model is an 8-step process, and I'll kind of take you through it as well. Starts out with establishing a sense of urgency. You know, why should I do this? What's pushing me forward? I always kind of think about it's sort of like, and it dates me a little bit, but it's sort of like Super Mario Brothers. How can I set the bridge on fire behind the guy so he doesn't turn around and go back where he was? Yep. The second step in Cotter's model is form a guiding coalition. And this is your leader, getting your leaders wrapped around this thing. And, you know, if we're talking about maintenance and reliability, that doesn't mean it's just your maintenance and reliability leaders. We're getting operations involved. We're getting HR involved. We're getting safety, health, and environmental involved. We're getting all of the partners involved as part of that guiding coalition. Once we do that, we've got to create a vision and a strategy. And that's really that direction piece. And a lot of people, they give this piece a little bit of lip service, if you will. They create some mission and vision statement. They put it up on the wall or put it on the back of a business card, but they don't really live it. It's not really something they're going after day in and day out. So for us, you know, when we get to this step, what we're looking for is for them to create a vision and strategy, but also really be able to articulate that strategy out to the organization so that no matter who they hear it from within that leadership team, even though they may say it differently, they get the same idea. And that leads into Cotter's next block, which is to communicate that vision. Some of the best sites that I've run across in implementing big deal changes over the years, this is one of the steps that I would say they got right. They had a vision. They defined that vision, they articulated that vision out to the organization, and they were able to get the organization excited about it. Now, the next step in Cotter's model is to empower others to act upon the vision. And this is one where a lot of leaders, they stumble a little bit, to be honest, because up until this point in Cotter's model, you know, you've been the hero. You've been the guy leading the change. It's been your ideas and your things that you're bringing forward. And then all of a sudden at this step, you've basically got to give your power away to a focus team or another individual in the organization that's going to handle parts of the greater vision that we're headed toward. A lot of folks can really stump their toe here a little bit and have a little bit of a tough time empowering others to act on the vision. Now, the next step in his model is to plan for and create short-term wins. And we do this through pilot areas or projects like we do with our IBL deliverables. It's all about creating small pockets of success so that others want that success, and it turns the implementation, instead of into a push, into a pull. They see that success, they want it, they want to pull it into their area, and I'm no longer forcing it down on them.
Say, that's huge. Those quick wins get people on board early. It gets them engaged, it gets them excited to continue doing this. If it's long and hard and difficult, then they're not going to want to do it, right? So give them those few quick wins up front.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just energizing for the group and energizing for the organization. And that really leads into exactly what Cotter's next step is, and that's to consolidate the improvements and produce more change. From my point of view, this is where all those quick wins start to add up and people want more and more of that out across the organization. The last step for Cotter is to institutionalize and anchor the new approach, which interestingly is very similar to the last step in the ADCAR model. It's all about reinforcement. How do we make this the way we do business moving forward? So that's a big step. So when you take the ADCAR model and you put it together with the organizational change model that Cotter has created, now I've got a way to get the individual on board. I've got a way to get the organization on board. And then the last model that I use quite a bit is a model that really focuses on how we as change leaders need to change ourselves. And I think that's something that a lot of people forget or miss. They have a preferred style for the way they like to do things, and they do it that way all the way through the implementation. When in reality, someone who's new in the change has a completely different set of needs than someone who's been in it and is almost complete with the implementation. And if we don't realize those differences, that's another area that can cause slowed return on investment. The model that I use, in case some of the listeners want to Google it or check it out, Situational Leadership 2 by Ken Blanchard. He is also the gentleman who wrote The 1 Minute Manager. I love his material around situational leadership and how it helps me remember that I need to diagnose where my teams are and then act accordingly moving forward.
That is a great model, not just for change management, but for being a leader in general. Do you have to provide direction and motivation, or do you just have to provide the direction, or is that person fully autonomous and has the direction and motivation to go out on their own? It's very, very powerful, that model.
I definitely agree with you on that situational leadership model. It was a real eye-opener for me, to be honest with you. I ran into a situation back before I knew what situational leadership was. I ran into a situation with an individual who came in to an implementation about midway through. And so he came in with the needs of someone who had just arrived, which is summed up with the word directing in the model. And the rest of the teams and myself, we were all kind of working over in a latter part of the model that is summed up by the word supporting. So I came into his office and told him, you know, what great work the teams were doing and how we were letting them bounce ideas off of us and things were really moving forward. But that wasn't what he needed. He needed to know what we were doing, why we were doing it, how we were doing it, who was involved. He needed those very directive details as to what he needed to be doing specifically. And because I didn't give him that, it was a mismatch. It really slowed us down being able to get up to speed. I imagine some of the listeners can probably think about situations as well where they maybe didn't have either the support from their manager, or they may not have provided support to the folks that work for them based on not being at the right place at the right time in that model.
Like I said, it applies to leadership in general. Now, you mentioned early adopters, the first followers for the ADCAR model. And if we take a look at the innovation curve, or the innovators, early adopters, early majority, so on and so forth, what group is the most important to get involved into the change?
When I think about this question, I'm wishy-washy on my answer. You know, without early adopters or first followers, there is no initiative. That puts a lot of importance in that category of folks who are the ones that are going to jump on board early. But at the end of the day, if I can't get that second large group to move forward, if I can't get that early majority to start buying in, I can't get to, as you said, the tipping point from Malcolm Gladwell. I can't get to that tipping point in order to move the rest of the organization over into the new way of doing business.
Yeah, it's vital to get them going, although it takes a while to get to that tipping point. It's not an easy process to get there.
You're exactly right. I mean, it can take months, years. I have seen, you know, some organizations that they were larger organizations that it took quite a long time to get to that tipping point just because of the sheer volume of the people that we were talking about.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Now, once we've got that tipping point and we're moving forward, what happens with the laggards, the ones that don't want to change, and no matter what we do, they're going to fight it? How do we deal with them in the change process?
Well, and I've seen quite a few studies on the laggard, and there are mixed opinions about how much focus you should put on them and what you should do to address that situation. I'll give you kind of a few of the facts as I've seen it. One study I saw said that you can expect in any big deal, as I've been calling it, big deal change, that about 10% of the organization won't be able to make the change. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to leave the organization. It just means they may not be in the role that they're currently in at the end of the implementation. So we have to keep that in mind. There is going to be a certain amount. I think back to an implementation that I did probably 10 or 12, maybe 15 years ago in a facility in Indiana. And in that facility, there was almost 10% of the craftsmen that really just did not want to do reliability. They wanted to stay in the traditional firefighting maintenance organization. And some of them ended up in new roles. Others chose to leave the organization. So that's that business write-off that the study actually refers to for those individuals. Now, the other thing that I'll say, though, too, I've had some of my biggest supporters come out of that very group, that small group of laggards, if you will. Some studies say you shouldn't really focus on them, that you should kind of let them do their thing and manage the other side of the curve, if you will. But my experience says take some time with them. Talk to them about what's in it for them. Use the ADCAR model on them and try to understand. And you won't win them all, but there have been more than a few occasions over the years that one of those grumpy laggards down there on that backside of the curve, for some reason, they got it and it became something they were interested in. And now they were just as grumpy, but now on the other side of the change, making sure everyone was doing it the right way.
Yeah, your biggest opponent becomes your biggest proponent.
You're exactly right. There's just so many times over the years that I can point at individuals that have done that. I definitely don't discount them.
That's good to know, because I know some people take the approach, well, I'll either leave them be as long as they don't cause trouble, and if they cause trouble, then we'll get rid of them. They don't put any effort in trying to convert them in the long term, which I think is vital. Now, does change need to be led from the top, or can we start at the bottom and work our way up?
I mean, I think you can definitely start at the bottom, but there's a point where you become pretty limited in your ability to move any further. I have seen, and I'm going to talk specifically about reliability today, so I've seen quite a few reliability initiatives over the years that were led really from the lower parts of the organization in the classical definition to a point where they had enough success that they opened the eyes of the leadership team to the return on investment moving forward. But in general, I really firmly believe that if you want to do it and do it in a reasonable amount of time, you need to have support both at the top and the bottom. You've got to have that boss that is saying that this is important to him, because if it's not important to him, it's not going to be important to the rest of us.
Absolutely. What's important to my boss is important to me.
You got it.
If we have support, do we have to do change management perfectly to see results, or will a little go a long way?
I think a little will go a long way, and I'll kind of, you know, loop back up to the study that we talked about in the opening today. That study says that if I'm just doing it fair, not great, just fair, then I am three times more likely to be successful than the folks that are doing it poor. So I think it's a great opportunity. Don't get into that analysis, paralysis by analysis type situation where you want it to be perfect before you go. Just go. and learn from it as you go forward, because the results will be so much better because you put that effort into change management than waiting till you got it perfect.
By doing a little bit of the awareness, creating a little bit of desire, starting to impart some knowledge, a little bit upfront makes a huge difference, because now people understand what's going on, what the impact is, what's the benefit for them. And that draws them in. Now, why do people struggle with change management then? I'm not going to say it's simple, but if it's the softer side of things, communicating with people, imparting knowledge, why is it so difficult?
Well, I mean, I think one of the big reasons, at least in our industry, I think one of the big reasons is a lot of us are engineers, let's be honest. In engineering school, they don't really talk about the softer side. You know, we're learning about how to, you know, run a differential equation, how to decide flow, how to look at stationary forces. You know, none of these are the softer side of getting folks to use the great inventions and knowledge that engineers create. Engineers, and I hate stereotypes, but I mean, engineers aren't known for being the most outgoing group either. So when you think about that and you tell an engineer that, hey, you know, a big part of change management is communication. A big part of change management is going out face to face and talking and trying to explain in a certain language to individuals that we need to do these things. That's just not our forte. It's not something that we're super comfortable with. So I think that's one of the reasons we struggle with a lot of the engineered implementations that we do.
And you know what, I hear this consistently from a wide range of people. So I think we should include a public speaking or a marketing course in engineering, just so that we can communicate better outside of our own little bubble, even just with the other groups within the organization.
When I train our reliability engineers and maintenance engineers here, one of the things that we talk about is they have to be sales and marketing. And it doesn't really matter what you're talking about, whether it's implementing a predictive maintenance program. I mean, if the plant sees you walking around with this black box, putting a little magnet on the equipment, that's not going to do it. You know, you've got to be able to find those failures with that vibe box, and then you've got to be able to take those bearings and show people what you're finding. Show them, you know, that it's doing something different, and then explain to them why that's better. Why finding it early is a better solution moving forward. So there's a pretty big amount of sales and marketing, even in what some people would think of as more traditional engineering and reliability role.
It's all about that buy-in, that sales. And I've heard it all the time in the past, and it is, you're not communicating the success you guys are getting. Communicate it better. By doing that little bit of communication, it raises the awareness. You gain further engagement from the leadership on that actual maintenance improvement or that maintenance program and then that change journey. It's vitally important. With that, what is the one thing you would change regarding the way change management is handled right now?
Man, that's a tough one. I'm going to give you two. I'm going to cheat a little. One and done is one of the problems I have, especially a lot of engineers. They'll say the words, well, I told them, and they think that one communication is enough. And I think a big part of change management is not just communicating one time and not just communicating in one media. It's communicating in multiple medias in different messaging formats so that you get all of the different unique individuals in your organization bought in. Now, the second thing that I see happen so often that I always bring it up, and it goes back to something we talked about a little earlier, and it's that whole situational leadership piece. I mean, you can't just use one style all the way through the implementation. If you do, you will only be successful in one of the four phases. And that's a struggle that I see over and over. And so that would be another one of my big ones.
Managing yourself is vitally important to being successful. If we could give our listeners one action to take away from this, one thing that they can go do and implement right away regarding change management, what would that be?
One thing that I would go do is, even if I didn't start teaching others about the models we talked about today, I would pick one of the models. And you know, an easy place to start is ADCAR. The next time you go to implement a change in your area, think about, what have you done to create awareness around that change? What have you done to get people really interested and amp up that desire to actually want to embrace that change? How are you training them to do it? And I hope you're training them specifically to their needs, not just random block training, and then testing them to see that they can do it, that they can actually take that training and convert it into action in the facility, and then reinforce it. And if you can go through and look at something you're implemented and see that it meets each of those objectives, I think you'll see a substantial change in the effectiveness of the change and also the speed of getting it implemented, leading to a bigger return on investment.
The AdCart book, it's an easy read. It's not difficult. It's not ginormous. It's a very easy reading book for the most part. So I'll make sure to link to that in the show notes for anyone who wants to grab it. They can just go in the show notes and click it. It'll take you right to the book. So, Sean, we've talked a tremendous amount about change management, and I think everyone is beginning to understand the importance of it, the impact it can have on any maintenance reliability program. So I thank you for sharing your knowledge around this subject with us. Where can people find out more about you? What events or activities are coming up? I know you're talking at all kinds of different conferences and running around the place. So,
well, I'll share with you kind of a couple of things. A lot of the topics that we've talked about today, we have short blogs that break that down into small little bite-sized chunks that folks can use. And that's on our blog at reliabilitynow.com. There is a word cloud about halfway down on the blog, and you can click on the words that you find interesting, and it might be change management or some other topic, and it'll take you to those blogs that are around that subject. So that could be a good resource for some folks to hear a little more about what we talked about today. If you want to meet me or spend some time with me and sit down and talk about what you're trying to change or how you're trying to implement it, I would love to do that. In June 7th and 8th, I'll be at the SMRP Symposium in Atlanta, Georgia. And then in July, I'll be out of the country part of July, but around July the 14th, the University of Alabama is doing a maintenance symposium, and I will be there as well. That is going to be in Birmingham, Alabama. So if any of you are going to be there, I'd love to meet you, shake your hand, and talk about anything I can help you with. And then, of course, we've got all the major conferences coming up this fall. One that I know you and I both are looking forward to, the SMRP Annual Conference in October. So if anyone's going to be there, I'd love to meet and talk and learn from each other.
I'm definitely looking forward to the annual conference. I always have a great time there. And the amount you learn from the peers, let alone the speakers, is fantastic. Just having those conversations with people. Hey, I'm having this problem. The chances are the people at that table that you're having breakfast with or lunch with have been through that. At least someone has. And then learning from each other is so important.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's one of the things that I've noticed, specifically about SMRP. You get to meet the giants, if you will, the folks who wrote all the books. They're there, and you can talk to them, and you can share your scenarios. But I have to reinforce exactly what you said. There is just an incredible amount of value in sitting down with others at breakfast and realizing they're fighting the same battles and then learning what tools they're using to win.
They have all the little tips and tricks that sometimes, and the nuances, you can't pick up in books when you have those conversations. So it's definitely encourage everyone to go there, and don't be afraid to ask your question, because like you mentioned, there's a lot of people going through the same thing you are. Well, Sean, once again, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge and coming on the podcast with us today to talk about change management and the importance of it. I know I definitely learned a few more things, and I'm assuming so did our listeners. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, James. I always enjoy coming on. It's always kind of fun rapping with you on here and kind of talking back and forth through some of these things. I think it adds a lot of value.
All right. Well, thank you, and you enjoy your Friday afternoon.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.